Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. A Las Vegas parole board has granted U.S. football and screen star O.J. Simpson parole after 9 years in prison for armed robbery and kidnapping. The 70-year-old Simpson made the case to the parole board that he'd served his time well.
I haven't made any excuses in 9 years here, but I should have never allowed these alleged security guys to help me because it turned out they were only trying to help themselves.
The Hall of Fame athlete, who was acquitted at the conclusion of a sensational murder trial in the 1990s, cited good behavior while imprisoned on the more recent convictions and told the court he wants to be released so he can be with his family. President Donald Trump told the New York Times recently that if a special prosecutor investigating Russia's influence on last year's presidential election and possible collusion expands the probe to look into Trump's family finances unrelated to Russia, that would cross the line of what is unacceptable. Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked by reporters Thursday whether the president would fire special prosecutor Robert Mueller.
I think that the president, the point he's trying to make is that the clear purpose of the Russia investigation is to review Russia's meddling in the election, and that should be the focus of the investigation, nothing beyond that.
In a wide-ranging interview, Trump also expressed dismay for the decision by Attorney General Jeff Sessions to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. On Wall Street, U.S. stocks closed mostly lower on Thursday. You're listening to VOA. Well wishes continue to pour in for Arizona Republican Senator John McCain, who was just diagnosed with a brain cancer. Republican Senator and colleague Jeff Flake says McCain remains in good spirits and plans to come back to work.
In my conversations with John, since the surgery, have been great. He wants to talk about what's going on and what he's going to do when he gets back here.
McCain's absence deprives the Senate of one of its strongest, most resolute voices and deprives Republicans of a vote they desperately need. President Trump's administration has ended Affordable Care Act contracts that brought assistance into neighborhoods in 18 cities, meaning shoppers on the insurance exchanges will have fewer places to turn for help signing up for coverage. Community groups call it an attempt to damage the health law's marketplaces by a president who has made clear his intention to let Obamacare fail. Well, the Trump administration's decision to end the CIA's semi-covert arming of Syria's rebel militias came as no surprise to the insurgent commanders who've been battling the government of President Bashar al-Assad for half a decade, but they remain angry at what they see as being cast off by an unreliable ally who they say never supplied them with sufficient weapons that would have enabled them to win the war against Assad. They say the decision to end a program that President Obama started amounts to a final abandonment of non-jihadist insurgent militias. The World Food Program is warning millions of people around the world are going to bed on an empty stomach because the cost of feeding them is escalating due to conflict, instability, and other complex emergencies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the WFP's World Food Assistance 2017 report was released.
The World Health Organization reports 36.7 million people are living with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. More than half that number are on life-saving antiretroviral therapy. The WHO says more than 10% of people starting antiretroviral therapy in 6 of the 11 countries surveyed were resistant to the drugs. But the WHO coordinator for HIV treatment and care, Meg Doherty, tells VOA other parts of the world have some of the highest incidence of drug resistance.
But once we have more people on therapy and more people who are potentially taking drugs that could alter the virus, the risk of this resistance can go up.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A bag containing traces of moon dust sold for $1.8 million at an auction Thursday following a galactic court battle. This is VOA.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia Supreme Court orders the Elections Commission to reinstate the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate.
I had said earlier that I had explicit confidence in the judiciary of Liberia. So today is just the beginning of the wisdom for Liberty Party, and that we are going on to win October 10, 2017 presidential and general election.
Harris Ekanwie is the vice presidential candidate of Liberia's Liberty Party. Meanwhile, the Elections Commission fears the ruling could impact the rest of this year's elections calendar. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza visits Tanzania and urges Burundian refugees there to return home. And Cameroon's government rejects Amnesty International's war crimes accusations.
The government feels outraged, utterly denies such an allegation, which aims at putting disreputation on our army, defaming our army and our government. This is the purpose of this kind of report.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister, and Gambian authorities discovered new bank accounts and landed properties associated with former President Yahya Jammeh. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Supreme Court on Thursday orders the country's Elections Commission to reinstate the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate for the October 2017 elections. The Elections Commission had disqualified Harris Ekanwie's selection as vice presidential candidate because it said he did not resign his government position as managing director of the Forestry Development Authority 2 years earlier, as stipulated in the Code of Conduct for appointed government officials who are desirous of running for an elected post. In its ruling, the court said the Elections Commission did not exercise due process before disbarring Mr. Kanwie from contesting. Kanwie says the court ruling reinforces his explicit confidence in the judiciary and that it marks the beginning of victory for the Liberty Party in the October election.
Well, I think it's just the beginning of the victory for Liberty Party. I had said earlier that I had explicit confidence in the judiciary of Liberia and the wisdom of the justices. So today is just the beginning of the wisdom for Liberty Party, and that we are going on to win October 10, 2017 presidential and general election.
The Supreme Court said that the National Elections Commission should serve you and the Liberty Party a notice of withdrawal. Have you received that notice?
I have not received any new notice from the Election Commission. However, our legal representations are not with me, and most likely whatever comes from there, they will be the first to receive it.
As you know, this whole code of conduct has almost polarized the Liberian society. Some people saying that the code of conduct should have been adhered to, and other people saying no. So what do you say to those who say the court, the Supreme Court, favor you and the Liberty Party?
Well, I would think they are very wrong. The Supreme Court was fair and just in its adjudication of this matter. Wherever we went wrong, they pointed out. The only thing they said is that whatever violation I may have committed doesn't warrant denying me the opportunity to run, and that there were a series of punishment or sanction regime in the law, and choosing the most severe one for minor violation didn't look appropriate. That's how I see it. It is a law that has been validated by the Supreme Court, and I think we should abide by it. It is a new beginning. But in subsequent election, I think this will set the standard for everybody.
Now, you said the ruling means that you and the Liberty Party and Mr. Bromskin are on the way to victory. Mr. Bromskin has run for the presidency now for about the third time, and he has not won, let alone come at least second place. What do you think your selection means now to the ticket?
Well, as the Liberian people and see the momentum that Liberty Party has gained over the last few months. The party has matured from two previous elections that it lost, and that we have also brought some level of enthusiasm to the party, we are following from across the country. And if you were to ask all over Liberia today, the whole country is jubilating because we had won. And so this shows that Liberty Party is ready. The Liberian people are ready for a change, and a change for the better.
I know the campaigning has not begun, but it seems to me that this is going to be a very tense campaign. What sort of campaign spirit would you like to see?
I would like to see a very cordial campaign spirit where we discuss the issues and not personalities, where everybody put his or her platform to the people and stop castigating one another, because the election will come and go and all of us will be here as Liberians. We've been friends before and we'll be friends again. So we should concentrate on politics and politics all the way and not personal attacks and acrimonious situation that makes people look at one another bad after the election.
Mr. Conway, congratulations again on your court victory and thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, Jim Bolte.
Harrison Kanwia is vice presidential candidate for Liberia's Liberty Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The chair of Liberia's Elections Commission says while he does not disagree with Thursday's Supreme Court ruling on the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate, he fears the ruling could impact the rest of this year's electoral calendar. In its ruling, the court ordered the commission to reinstate the candidature of Liberty Party's vice presidential candidate Harrison Kanwia for the October 2017 elections. The commission had disbarred Mr. Kanwia from running as vice presidential candidate because it said he violated the code of conduct for appointed government officials. Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya says his commission expects a flood of other candidates who might want due process in line with the Supreme Court ruling.
I haven't read the decision, you know, it just came out today. But from what I'm hearing, the standards that were needed for effective implementation of the code, we understand they were set. So if that's true, then that will help the commission to carry out its work. But the only thing is that given the due process requirement that have been imposed, that would interfere with our schedule. We had intended starting campaign on the 31st. So I am not too sure with this new development with respect to the due process requirement that date may still stand. But that's something that we have to discuss with the rest of my colleagues.
Exactly, Mr. Commissioner. The court was very critical of your commission, saying that you did not exercise due process. And you say you have a concern how that might impact the work of your commission.
Yeah, a concern. Not that we disagree. You know, the court is always right. So we're not taking issue with the court because when we're doing our planning, we didn't have any provision there for the kind of requirement that have been imposed with respect to the due process. You know, when you get due process, all the attending characteristics will require time. People may appear and then ask you that, look, I am not ready, or my counsel is not here. So all of these requests you have to accommodate, and then you cannot grant due process and then don't abide by all of the attending conditions. So I'm just a little worried that that may interfere with the time because we really wanted to start a campaign on the 31st. But now that we have to first set up citations and then people appear, we conduct due process hearing. And most of the people, or some of them, if not all, may want to appear through counsel. So I'm just a little concerned that those kind of activities that we must accommodate if we have to afford the due process may interfere with our planning. That could take us a little more further.
Help me to understand, Mr. Chairman, besides Mr. Kanwia, the Liberty Party vice presidential candidate, who else did your commission reject? Is it former Ambassador Jeremiah Solonte? And those are the only two profile candidates. What do you mean that it might take a while to give due process? Do you have other candidates?
Well, yeah, sure. There are other candidates who the commission believe were in violation. I haven't read the opinion myself or the decision, but if what I'm hearing is correct, you may very well receive some people tomorrow because there have been some people in similar situations like Mr. Kanwia and the other people that we rejected earlier.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Cameroon's government has rejected an Amnesty International report accusing the military of war crimes. In its latest report, Amnesty International says detainees in Cameroon are subject to severe beatings and drownings, with some torture to death. It also stated that without evidence, security forces brutalize and torture alleged Boko Haram suspects. But Cameroon Information Minister Issa Chirumaka Bakari says the accusations are without merit, insisting that the report is aimed at embarrassing the military and by extension the government. He tells viewers Peter Clotty the Cameroonian government is gathering evidence to disprove the allegations.
The government feels outraged. Totally deny such an allegation, which aims at putting disreputation on our army, defame our army and our government. This is the purpose of this kind of report. Why didn't Amnesty International bring forward the report, discuss with us, the Minister in Defense, the Minister of Communication, the spokesperson of the government? Why did they fail to do such a thing in order to have the contradiction? And I would like your listener to know that Cameroon has signed all conventions dealing with the protection and promotion of human rights. It remains permanent. The fact that our army, whoever, a military, no matter which grade, is picked up, taken, red-handed, violating the human rights, is demobilized and brought to book, court-martial, and subsequently punished. This is the rule which is prevailing in our army, in our nation.
Detainees in Cameroon are subjected to severe beatings, agonizing straight positions, and drownings, with some tortured to death. This is a report. Will the Cameroonian government investigate and find the perpetrators who are behind this?
In case they have trustworthy, undeniable report, let them give this report to the government. We are going to assess it. And their investigation might be led, might be taken. The purpose of Boko Haram is to amputate part of our nation and to form their caliphate with part of our nation. The responsibility of the nation as a whole behind the army and the head of state is to deliver the goods, which means to protect our nation and way of life and societal way of life. This, first of all, has to be understood. The second thing is that we are collateral victims. We are collateral victims. Not to say anything about our economy, our finances are being bleeded by Boko Haram action. Now, we are victims, and we are being presented by Amnesty International as we were aggressor, we were executioner. We deny it, we refuse it, and we are ready, so soon as we receive the document, our experts will focus the mind on it. And the next week, Monday or Tuesday, I will give a press conference during which I will debunk this allegation. On Tuesday, send your representative, and we will produce whatever is possible to be produced. But first of all, we have to receive an official notification of this report.
I'm very aware of the constitutional responsibility of the government to protect its territorial integrity as well as to ensure the protection of civilians. However, they are saying in fighting or maintaining the country's territorial integrity, there have been issues of extrajudicial murders.
As far as the petitioning of Amnesty International is concerned, the government is taking the necessary time. When we are in position of this report, we will take time and we will commit experts to analyze and to issue a report. But as I tell you, next week, not far than next week, the first element that we have which contradicts Amnesty International report will be aired during a press conference that I am about to give next week.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital Yaoundé. Gambian authorities say they have found 7 new bank accounts and landed properties associated with former President Yahya Jammeh. Sidi Marana reports from Banjul.
Gambia's Justice Department froze Jammeh's domestic asset in May, a move that was the instant seizure of 131 landed properties, 88 bank accounts and 14 companies and number of livestock. The latest discovery brings the number of banks associated with the former leader to 95. As authorities race to seize Jammeh asset while a commission look into allegations of corruption and financial mismanagement. Meanwhile, President Barrow has turned down his Attorney General Abubakar Ba Tambedu's offer to resign following the leaking of an audio between a special prosecutor and the wife of embattled former spy chief, standing trial for killing former opposition activist Solo Sande. Addressing the press at the presidency in Banjul on Thursday, President Adama Barrow's press secretary said the president has trust and confidence in his justice minister and therefore reject his resignation offer.
A tape on a conversation between a family member of one of the people in the NIA 9 case and Sheriff Tambedu, a prosecution team member, has been leaked. In this light, Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu, a brother to Sheriff, felt strongly about the content of the leakage and offered his resignation to President Barrow yesterday. However, having carefully considered the resignation offer, the president rejected it because of the trust and confidence he has in the minister.
The special prosecutor resigned on Monday to maintain the integrity of the trial against 9 former intelligence officers accused of killing an opposition activist Solo Sande. The attorney general, a former UN prosecutor and a brother to the special prosecutor, had criticized the police for the arrest of the suspect after it appeared that it occurred without his knowledge and investigations were rushed. Call for AG Tambedu's resignation gained ground when special prosecutor, his brother Sheriff Tambedu, met with the wife of the ex-spy chief, Yangu Abaji, where they discussed the case and a plea that was offered to Mr. Baji. Also addressing the press on Thursday in Banjul, the justice minister announced the latest findings on Jammeh asset.
We continue to receive additional information in respect of a significant number of assets purportedly belonging to him and his close associates. We, however, want to make sure that the reports we are getting about ownership of these latest assets are factual and accurate. We have now filed a supplemental list of assets before the High Court in Banjul for the inclusion of these newly discovered assets in the freezing order. So far, this new list includes 49 additional landed properties located in the Greater Banjul area, bringing the total number of known landed properties owned by former President Yahya Jammeh to 180 in the country.
Meanwhile, the former ruling party, now in the opposition, has demanded Gambian authorities to drop charges against dozens of its supporters that were arrested during clashes between protesters and West Africa Stabilization Force in Banjul. The authorities charged at least 23 people, including 2 soldiers, for taking part in the protests and have since been released on bail. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Sini M.K. Marina.
President Pierre Nkurunziza has urged Burundian refugees in Tanzania to return home. He made the call Thursday during a visit to Tanzania, his first outing since his re-election in 2015. Moses Aviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Gambia's Justice Department froze Jammeh's domestic asset in May, a move that was the instant seizure of 131 landed properties, 88 bank accounts and 14 companies and number of livestock. The latest discovery brings the number of banks associated with the former leader to 95, as authorities race to seize Jammeh asset while a commission look into allegations of corruption and financial mismanagement. Meanwhile, President Barrow has turned down his Attorney General Abubakar Ba Tambedu's offer to resign following the leaking of an audio between a special prosecutor and the wife of embattled former spy chief, standing trial for killing former opposition activist Solo Sande. Addressing the press at the presidency in Banjul on Thursday, President Adama Barrow's press secretary said the president has trust and confidence in his justice minister and therefore reject his resignation offer.
A tape on a conversation between a family member of one of the people in the NIA 9 case and Sheriff Tambedu, a prosecution team member, has been leaked. In this light, Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu, a brother to Sheriff, felt strongly about the content of the leakage and offered his resignation to President Barrow yesterday. However, having carefully considered the resignation offer, the president rejected it because of the trust and confidence he has in the minister.
The special prosecutor resigned on Monday to maintain the integrity of the trial against 9 former intelligence officers accused of killing an opposition activist Solo Sande. The attorney general, a former UN prosecutor and a brother to the special prosecutor, had criticized the police for the arrest of the suspect after it appeared that it occurred without his knowledge and investigations were rushed. Call for AG Tambedu's resignation gained ground when special prosecutor, his brother Sheriff Tambedu, met with the wife of the ex-spy chief, Yangu Abaji, where they discussed the case and a plea that was offered to Mr. Baji.
Let's report Moses Javier Rimana reporting from Bujumbura. Standard for Daybreak Africa is posting here is Samson Omalley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
A very good morning to you, James. We begin in Morocco, where the Confederation of African Football Executive Committee has approved that the African Cup of Nations will be expanded to be contested for by 24 teams, up from 16 from the 2019 edition of the tournament in Cameroon. CAF has also opted to switch the continental showpiece from January to February to June-July, although the tournament will still take place every 2 years rather than moving it to a 4-year schedule. The decisions was reached following the 2-day CAF symposium in Rabat, Morocco, where the June-July date will put an end to a long-standing feud between CAF and European clubs, unhappy with losing many of the African players for a month at the crucial part of the season every other year. And following several reports and insinuations that Cameroon may not be ready to host the 2019 AFCON, the country's sports minister has said that the 2019 African Cup of Nations will go ahead in the country despite concerns over the pace of preparations. Recent reports suggest that stadium construction is behind schedule, while Cameroon also faces economic problems. Ismail Bindong said despite security concerns, social and economic crisis, the Cameroonian government is totally committed to do everything possible for the Nation Cup to go ahead. And now to Ghana, where one of Ghana's biggest football clubs, Asante Kotoko's coach, Steve Pollock, has left the Komfa Anokye Teaching Hospital, where he has been on admission for 1 week. The Englishman suffered injuries from last Wednesday night's fatal accident involving the team bus with 18 players and technical team members who were returning to Kumasi from Accra, where they played Inter Allies in Ghana Premier League match. Unfortunately, the club deputy equipment officer, Thomas Obi Bieng Asare, lost his life. In athletics news, Uganda will not have the complement of his star athletes Stephen Kiprotich and Moses Kipsiro ahead of the 2017 IWAF World Championship in London next month. Both athletes opted out of the championship even after they achieved the qualifying mark for the marathon. Kiprotich, a gold medalist at the 2012 London Olympics and the 2013 World Championships, and Kipsiro, a 4-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist, were expected to boost the chances of Uganda winning medals in London. The development is another blow for Team Uganda, who this week also lost female marathoner Andrew Yekasi due to an ankle injury. And now to basketball news. Algeria grabbed the last spot for the semis at the ongoing 2017 FIBA Under-16 African Championship. The North African will take on Mali today at the Phoenix Gymnasium for a place in Saturday's finals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington. And do have a good weekend.
And that's it for this Friday, July 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good weekend.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.